We are here with Keely Gray and Courtney Roberts from the Lake Pondre Repertory Theater Company. Keely is the founder and director, and Courtney Roberts is the education director and an actor in their upcoming performance of The Importance of Being Earnest by Mr. Oscar Wilde. Yes. I think that's all I have to say about that.
Okay. Well, it's coming up at the Panada Theater, and it's coming up on the 23rd and 24th of this month, and the 30th of this month, and the 1st of the next month. Okay. A Friday, Saturday. So we're going to throw it over to Keely and Courtney. Courtney, who is a character in the play. Give a sales pitch, Keely, about, and then what we'll do is we'll talk about the play, and then we'll talk about Lake Pondere Rep Company. How does that work for you?
Sounds perfect, Jim.
Okay. Awesome. Tell us about the play. You know, in terms of you make lots of choices. Mm-hmm. This is the repertoire company that did Young Frankenstein, a terrific success. And then 3 weeks ago, I think, Peter Pan?
In August.
Wonderful. I mean, to see the kids up on the stage was superb. Let's go back. When you make a decision, I take it you're part of the decision-making process for the play. Mm-hmm. What do you look for?
Well, this show in particular was kind of a selfish choice for me as a director, because Young Frankenstein was kind of the way that we wanted to introduce ourselves to the community and smack them in the face with just how amazing this company could be. So it was a very
ambitious. Thank you so much.
It was a huge undertaking, but with the crew that we assembled and the company that we have, we were able to make it just everything that we wanted it to be and more. We jokingly refer to Young Frankenstein as the show that should have never happened.
Yeah.
Because we did face a postponement due to COVID. We had designers drop out.
That's right.
Yeah. We had a lot of things to overcome.
A lot of hurdles.
But it was definitely kind of a trial to get us here. And so after Young Frankenstein, I told my crew and my company, I'm like, I need something that I love, that I know in and out, that's like one of my favorite works to do. So this was a very selfish piece for me, basically saying, if I'm going to direct a show next, it's going to be Importance of Being Earnest, because I just want to have a fun time and play with actors and show this community just how funny British humor can be.
Okay, and can you say a little bit about the play by Oscar Wilde? First performed, I think, in 1895.
Mm-hmm.
So it has, and I think there's like 8 different films made on it.
You're probably right. I'm mostly familiar with the Reese Witherspoon, Colin Firth, Judi Dench version, which I think a lot of folks are. But yeah, the show is actually surprisingly relatable to today, just because it deals with the airs that we put on, the affronts that we put on to make ourselves feel like we're important, when really the important part of living is to be yourself and to, you know, find that value within. And so the play is hilarious because it takes us through this journey of these characters. Ultimately, their quest is for love, but throughout it, they have to face themselves and accept who they really are. And Oscar Wilde does it in only the way that he can, with just making ridiculous fun of the elites and just poking fun at all of the little foibles that is humanity. And a lot of these characters spend a lot of time not only prophesizing what's going to happen, like there's a lot of foreshadowing that characters do for themselves, but they make fun of themselves relesslessly without even realizing it, which is
part of the beauty of it.
Exactly.
Absolutely. And Courtney, you're in the play.
Yes, I am.
And can you talk about your character?
Yes, I play Cecily Cardew, who is the ward of Jack Worthing, who is the one who pretends to be Ernest. She is a very fun, girly, soft, feminine character, but she's also a little bit
out of breath
and a little bit nuts too. So she's been delightful to play, and I've just been having so much fun embodying her. It's been a delight, and Keely's direction is just fantastic.
Seeing Courtney take the stage is quite a feat, because we're all used to stage manager Courtney, because she was our stage manager for Young Frankenstein. So to see her kind of tap into this girly, very like soft and effervescence is just so fun because this is Courtney who does jujitsu.
What are some of the challenges? Young Frankenstein was a musical. Mm-hmm. What sort of challenges do you have with, this is a non-musical, mm-hmm. it's farcical, with essentially a stage play? What's the, I mean, what are the challenges that you're facing?
Well, I think the challenge that's been on my mind is making sure that we make it accessible to our audience and to our community, and that they feel like, even though it's not a musical, because musicals tap into something that I feel is very universal, and it draws a big audience. So with this play, we're really trying to emphasize the humanity and the connection and the humor so that, you know, everybody who wants to come see it will enjoy it, have a good time, laugh, but also feel like they're learning something at the same time, because the dialogue is very, it can feel very inaccessible because it was written during a different time.
Exactly.
So we want to make sure that we're tying it into a relatable front now. Which is kind of how we reflected it in the poster, because we actually have a great image on our poster of the characters are like are on a cell phone and being held. So we've got two Victorian characters on a cell phone in a hand, which I just thought was so representative of what we're doing. But yeah, our biggest challenge is to make it so that everybody can understand it and enjoy it.
I'd like to ask Courtney. I would think that when you do a comedy like this, and you're counting on the audience laughing, how do you get the rhythm of your lines? In other words, you're not, when you rehearse, you don't have the laughter of the audience. And so you don't know, do I hesitate or on what beat do I respond? How do you work with that in rehearsing?
Well, you never really know until the night of the show what exactly the audience is going to laugh at. But I love working with this language that the way Oscar Wilde writes, and it's helped so much with my memorization and the process and getting into the character, because it's so specific and so beautifully written. Mm-hmm. That has just been my favorite part of preparing for this comedy. But as far as the audience, yeah, you never really know, and it kind of takes that instinct to be able to, oh, we're holding for this line tonight. I guess they thought that was funny. But that's what I love about live theater, and that ability to connect with the audience and never know what's going to happen next.
And, you know, you're doing four performances, what could click one night, and you're waiting for the beat from the audience, and oops, it's not there, and so you have to be... You mentioned memorizing your lines. Do you have any tricks, any... ways that you go about? I remember as a kid in grade school, I hated memorizing. And do you have any, how do you read the script over and over and over and it sort of settles in? Do you have any tricks?
Repetition. I literally will go three lines at a time and get those three lines. And once they have those, I'll go to the next three. And once I've got about maybe 12 done, then I'll go back and do all those 12, and I go through that for my entire script. For me, it's a very long process, but for me as an actor, it's very important that when I'm on stage, my lines are second nature. That way I can focus on Bingo. Everything else.
Yeah, where you're standing or whatever. How long are you on the stage in this play? Are you on quite a bit?
Yes, so my character does not appear in Act 1, but I'm on for most of Act 2 and all of Act 3. So the first act takes place in London, where some of the characters live, and then in Act 2 we go to the country home of Jack Worthing, and that's where my character lives.
Okay, let's go back to Keeley. As a director, you've got support people, you've got staging, you've got the sets, you've got... Where are you at now? The play is going to be on the Panada stage on the 23rd. That's about a week and a day.
Yeah. Well, I'll just take this opportunity to brag about this process and my cast and my crew, because a lot of the misconceptions about theater is that it's magic and it just happens and it magically appears and ta-da, here it is. That couldn't be farther from the truth. A lot of people are surprised to know that production teams are actually assembled usually 6 months to a year before a production even takes the stage. And so that's what we did with this crew, is I assembled my crew probably not 6 months, but 4 to 5 months in advance before the show. And I got a set designer, a costume designer, props manager. I got all of these, my favorite people together, and said, here's my vision. This is what I want to do. How can we make this happen? And I am so thrilled to say that for the first time, which has been a dream of mine for this company, I don't have to be everything. I get to delegate, and I get to trust my professionals to take over. Like Courtney was mentioning before, I think we went on air that our set has been built this weekend. And so my professionals, my crew is kicking butt. They are doing so great, and they make it so I don't have to worry, and I just get to play with my actors. And my actors, I will also brag about them. Most of them came to their very first rehearsal almost completely off book, meaning they were almost fully memorized. And if anybody's read this book.
Oh, that's an interesting phrase, off book. You're not needing the book.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
Yes, okay. I know. That's why I was like, a lot of people don't know what that means.
That sounds like ad lib.
Exactly. Yeah, so I was very thrilled that the professionalism that I've been trying to attain is already being met with our second show. It's absolutely phenomenal. So I'm just thrilled because I get to be a director, and I'm working with a crew that lets me be picky, that lets me really see my vision through. And then I also wear the producer hat, of course, because I'm managing the company as well. So it's just been a very freeing experience and very fun.
Who else is in the cast?
Oh, yes. We have a very wonderful cast. We've got Michael Bigley, who is playing Jack/Ernest Worthing. Corey Repass as Algernon Moncrief. Marsha Murie as Lady Bracknell. Holly Beeman as Gwendolyn Fairfax. Miss Courtney Roberts over here as Cecily Cardew. Yay. Meredith Field, who is playing Miss Prism. Steve Hammond, who is Canon Chasuble. Then we've also got Eric Schrack as Merriman and Morgan McCallum as Lane.
McCallum Morgan.
Is it McCallum Morgan?
Yes.
McCallum, if you're listening, I'm very sorry, my friend.
is everybody there in that cast an experienced actor? Or did we have any first time?
I believe that McCallum, this is his first time on stage. Wow. And we all fell in love with him at auditions just because of his openness and his willingness to just jump in. And he's actually an author in Bonner's Ferry. He's written some books. And I do believe that he's a creative, and so he fit right in with us, and he's just been going above and beyond. And we do actually have some folks who haven't been on stage in a very long time, like Marsha. This was her first play that she'd auditioned for, she said, in like nearly over 15 years.
Yeah, 30, wow. I think.
Wow. Yeah, so she was really excited to come back. And I mean, you're going to see a lot of your old favorites that have been on stage. Holly, who was Igor in Young Frankenstein, this absolutely stunning woman, played Igor with a hump on her back, and she gets to be Gwendolyn Fairfax, so you get to see her in all of her feminine glory up on the stage, and this is actually, she shared with me one of her dream roles, which is so thrilling to be able to help make those dreams come true for actors. But yeah, we've got a lot of old faces, lots of new faces, lots of faces that you've probably seen in years past but are coming back. So we've got a really great mixture, and I'm very proud that we're attracting the people that we are to the company.
So where are you now in the process of getting this on the stage? You've been rehearsing, can you fill a little bit in on the journey?
Absolutely. So when we get started with rehearsals, we usually just segment it out based on scenes. Okay. So we break it down, and we call it blocking, which is, I'm the director, so I'm going to guide my actors on, you're going to move here on stage. I'd like you to evoke this type of feeling. Here's the conversation we're having. What do you want? What are your goals? We go through that process until we finish the show. We build the show one scene at a time. And then we start doing what we call full run-throughs, which is where we start the show, run it from top to bottom. Right now, we're in the process of full run-throughs. And I think tonight we actually get to have a full run through / costume parade.
Ooh,
which is
a big,
where our costume
a big stage.
So we get to see all of the costumes. The actors get to move in them and practice what it feels like to be in their costumes. And then on Monday of next week, we actually get to move into the theater and get our set and our props and our costumes all in house. And then we start what we call Tech Week, which is a week where we're doing exactly what it sounds like. We're getting the lights together. We're getting the sound together. We're making sure we have all of the moving parts. We invite a stage crew that comes backstage that helps move set pieces, move prop pieces, help with costumes. Theater is a very, it takes a lot of people coming together. It's like a community. It is really a community event, and you have to have all of the pieces and all of the people for it to work.
So do you find that sometimes your direction, let's say, for example, you'll be on the stage on Monday and you realize, ooh, Panada doesn't have a light that hits Courtney the way it should. So I'm going to have Courtney move over here. So there's still some fluidity, isn't there?
Totally. There has to be. And that's always the conversation that you have to have with your company and with your actors is, hey, guys, we're doing the best we can to, you know, make a proximity of what we think the stage is going to be. And sometimes we do measure it out. Like if we have, for Young Frankenstein specifically, we had dance numbers.
Exactly.
So we had to make sure that we had enough space for
room
all of our
for
dancers.
Everyone.
Yes. So sometimes we will measure and we'll lay out some gaff tape on the floor and make sure that we're not falling out of those lines. And then it's always the joke of, haha, you're off stage now. But, yeah, there's always that adaptability factor, which I think is what makes creatives even better and more professional, is that ability to say, okay, here's the footwork that my director gave me. We have to adjust it. I always say that actors have two brains. They have their character brain and they have their actor brain. Your character brain's living in the world. The actor brain's like, oh, I have to take two steps this way because my light is right there.
Wow.
Can you tell us more about the costumes?
And if Renee's listening, we love her. Renee is actually Courtney's mother, and she was a costume assistant and for Young Frankenstein, and she loves it, and she's really gifted at it. She does immense amounts of research, and she's actually helping a lot with also the makeup and the hair, because her research has been so diligent on the time period that we're even finding like facial hair for men that was of that time. And Canon Chasuble has probably my favorite one. It's called the Hulahi. And it's shaved down the middle of the chin and it's all fluffy off to the side. And that was a traditional style for that time period. And so it's been really fun to see Renee just run with the time period and just be so excited about the costumes. And they're beautiful. Oh my goodness.
So what are you wearing, Courtney?
Oh, I love my dress.
She does. she had to put it on the first rehearsal. She got it.
I have a pink dress that's covered in roses and it has a little apron and my hair is going to be curled like it is right now. Having the costumes on is such a, it makes such a difference too, because we've actually been rehearsing in corsets and hoop skirts because it makes a difference with your movement and how you sit. And honestly, we're still kind of getting used to it, but it'll be really nice.
How heavy is your costume? I mean, there's a lot of material, isn't there?
It's not actually that heavy. The hoop skirts are pretty light.
Hoops.
Yeah.
Okay,
we don't have like petticoats and petticoats. But once we get on stage, it'll be pretty warm, I bet.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And it's been pretty funny with the hoop skirts because they have like, if you don't sit in them right, they will fly up and hit your face. And the first night of rehearsals with the hoop skirts was hilarious.
And if you run too fast,
what's the secret
of Courtney?
Sitting down?
Go slowly.
Okay, go, and let it nestle down on you.
You have to think about it. Every time I go too fast is when it flies up in my face or I trip on it. So slowly.
Should we take a break and talk more about the play when we come back and what's ahead for LPO?
We probably should.
Okay.
You're listening to The Morning Show, by the way, with Jim and Jack.
That's Jack over there. I'm Jim over here, which everybody out there in Radioland can see. And I want to thank Jack for getting that humming down.
I think we did. Yeah.
It's doable.
Yeah.
On this date, if you can believe it, in 1930, Hoagy Carmichael recorded Georgia on My Mind. And of course,
don't you mean Ray Charles?
Ray Charles did a version, I want to say, in the late 50s on Modern Sounds and Country Music, I think on that album, Georgia on My Mind. And it's become the state song of Georgia. But this is the original version co-written by Hoagy Carmichael. And it's interesting.
Okay.
Here on 88.5 KRFY.
Georgia, Georgia, no peace I find. Just an old sweet song keeps Georgia on my mind.
There we go. In 1930, September 15th, this song was recorded, and it was co-written by Hoagie Carmichael. And we're here in the studio with Keely Gray and Courtney Roberts, and we're making talk about the importance of being earnest that will take the Panada stage on the 23rd and the 24th. That's a week from tomorrow. That's a Friday, Saturday. And then the next Friday, Saturday, the 30th, and the 1st of October, whoosh, September has left the building.
Yeah. This is a comedy written by Oscar Wilde, set and originally written in 1895, right?
That's when it was first performed. Some more details. Where can one get tickets?
Oh, yes. Thank you for that. If you go to our website, lporep.com, lporep.com, you will be able to find tickets. We have links connected to our Eventbrite page where you can just click which night you want to go. It's a very easy process. Tickets are $20. And we will be selling tickets at the door if we do not sell out. We have already started ticket sales and they are humming along very nicely. So my suggestion would be to get them while they're hot. Because Young Frankenstein, we had a line out the door for a couple of our Saturday nights. So get your tickets soon. We'll open the doors as soon as we can and get you in there to have some fun.
I think doors open at 7 and the play begins at 7:30.
6:30 doors.
6:30 doors.
7 o'clock show.
Oh, good. I just went to the website. Okay.
If it says that on the website, we will.
What does it say there? Does it say on the website?
Oh, it says 30-minute doors open 30 minutes before show, and then the times of the show is 7 p.m.
Okay, got it. Okay. Let me ask you, I've oftentimes wondered, when you have a staggered, you know, Friday, Saturday, what are you doing in the week between?
Oh, great question. So usually we reserve most of the week for rest, just because the process leading up to a show can be very intense, and there's a lot of stress that happens. And so in the week in between, we make sure that our actors are resting, our crew is resting, but we also have what's called a pickup rehearsal, which is something that's usually a smack dab in the middle of the week. That's basically just a giant refresher course. We generally don't have costumes for that one unless there are quick changes, but it's just running through the show to get our muscle memory back for the performance coming up. But in between performances, it's very important to rest and recuperate so that you can regain that energy for the next run.
And where will you be in the theater while Courtney's on stage? Are you moving around? Are you in the first row?
I cannot sit still during productions. And I blame it on my teacher days when I was coaching students in acting. And if anybody has ever seen any artistic, like, acting coach or voice coach, it is a very good thing that we hang in the back, because we are saying lines, we are doing gestures, we are basically trying to send all of our creative, supportive energy up to our cast on stage. If they feel it or not, we're not really sure, but it can be rather hysterical to watch. So I float around the theater all the time just to kind of check in, see how the audience is reacting, go back upstairs, kind of check in with my tech team. I float around a lot to try probably to dissipate some of my butterflies, but also just to kind of keep that energy flowing and hope that my cast and crew can feel it.
Courtney, are you ever on the stage alone in this play?
Yes, a couple times, actually. My character actually gets to talk to the audience a little bit.
Breaking down that third wall?
Fourth wall. Yes, that's right. Quite fun. Mm-hmm.
Cool. And what are you going to be doing during the first act?
During the first act, I'll be backstage getting ready for the second act. And at the top of Act 2, I'm actually in a garden studying with Miss Prism, my governess.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, were there, and then Corey's character decides to show up, and then the act kind of takes off from there, I would say.
I'm just sort of curious, would you feel more pressure being the only person on the stage delivering lines as opposed to playing off of people?
It's kind of fun because it's not very long. I don't have any like soliloquies or long speeches. I just kind of have some fun little lines that are actually quite funny.
She gets to abuse books.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Ooh. Yeah. It's quite fun multiple times.
I had to give her permission to be very, very abusive to said books.
The first time I had a really hard time because I love books and I wasn't quite in my hadn't quite found my character yet. So I was still very much Courtney. And Keely's like, I need you to beat the books on the table. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't do that.
They're friends. They're friends.
But we got there. And now
she gets to chuck a book.
Yeah.
Excellent. So we'll return to the play. What's ahead for LPO rep?
Lots of things. I am very excited to talk about, we have an education program that was launched this summer with our Peter Pan production, which was absolutely fantastic.
And Courtney had a major role in that.
Courtney is our education director, and she is leading the charge with our program to teach young ones how to be on stage. And she has a fabulous start with Showstoppers, which is founded by Courtney, and she's been kind enough to jump in and
with the Pondre Arts Council.
Of course, I was going to mention them. We love ourselves some POAC. They've been huge supporters.
Fantastic.
And they actually were co-collaborators with us on this camp as well.
Yes.
As well as the Panada. So it was a kind of trifecta of nonprofits coming together to
and
make it work.
One of the things I have to admit that I enjoy, usually I'm in the lobby, and to see parents and grandparents and aunts and uncles come through, but with bouquets of flowers that they're going to be giving to the artists up on the stage. Yeah, that it's such a family affirming sort of experience. And so, Courtney, the work that you do, and most recent in my mind was the Peter Pan, that was superb. And I'm quite sure it was a thrill for the kids as well as the family members.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so grateful for what I get to do. I'm super passionate about theater and I love teaching, and you're right. Like, I've had families reach out to me and just say, wow, my child has grown so much.
Bingo.
I've seen such changes. Mm-hmm. And when I hear stuff like that, it makes me feel so good. And like, what I'm doing is really making that difference, because I've seen kids. I mean, I have one student, the first time she introduced herself to me, I could not hear her name. Uh-huh. And now she has a larger role in the show that I'm directing right now. And so it's just been fantastic to watch her grow throughout, and that so many other students too. And now that I've been doing it for about a year or so now, I'm really starting to see that growth. And yes, the families are
That's
always so grateful.
It's gotta be rewarding.
I'm very grateful for what I get to do.
Excellent. So down the road, have you been thinking beyond the importance of being earnest?
We actually do have a season planned. I wish I could announce the shows on air, but we have not purchased rights for them yet.
You don't want to build expectations
exactly.
And have them dashed.
Exactly. But I will say that we've got two shows coming up for the spring and fall of 2023 that we already have directors that are assembling their crews. This one's going to direct the musical next spring. And if Sandpoint thought that Young Frankenstein was amazing and that Importance of Being Earnest is going to be amazing, next year is going to knock their socks off. We're only going to keep getting better and better. And the one hint that I will drop for the musical
hint.
Is it is a Sondheim classic.
Okay. So it could...
I know. You can't pick it out, though.
No, yeah. Hard to narrow that one down.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. It's like saying it'll be a Shakespeare play.
Exactly.
We mentioned the actors coming up in The Importance of Being Earnest. You mentioned the tech team. How big is a tech team for a show like this? How many people are involved, during the production who aren't on stage?
Great question. Our production crew, we've got about five or six, including our stage manager, who's Sarah Morgan, and she is incredible.
Fantastic.
This is her first time stage managing, and Courtney's been mentoring her. And so we've got about five folks that have been with me in the process of the production team, building the vision, building the show, costumes, props, set, light, sound, all of that. And then when we get to showtime, it depends upon how rigorous and intense the changes are. Mm-hmm. When we did Young Frankenstein, I think Courtney had a crew of about five or six.
I had six specifically only dedicated to the scene transitions, not including anyone for costume. So I had a crew of six just for the scene changes.
And I feel like Chris had a team of about four for costumes. So that's 10 right there. And I think we've built a team of about...
Wesley Lucas, Tim.
I think we've built a team of about five or six. That'll probably be for all of those, the above, because our costumes aren't... I mean, our costumes are beautiful, but we had a lot of quick changes in Young Frankenstein. So we had to have a team backstage ready to help with those quick changes. But there's probably a good about 10 to 15 people that are backstage making stuff happen and making it all appear like it's so easy when it's really a lot of work.
And we've got to have fun with the crew for this show because we actually get to dress them up. Someone who had the idea of wouldn't it be a great idea if the crew was in costume while they're doing the scene changes, because we have a couple scene changes. So they actually get costumes and top hats themselves.
Oh, what fun. What fun. So it takes a village to put on a play.
Yes, it does.
And then it takes the village to witness and watch the play and come down to the Panada.
That's why community is one of my favorite words in the world.
There you go. So this is the importance of being earnest. The 23rd and 24th, 1 week from tomorrow, Friday, Saturday, and then the following Friday, Saturday. And then what happens after that?
And then we can breathe.
And then we breathe for a little bit. Well, we're trying to put together a fundraiser for December. That's still kind of up in the air. But what'll probably, the biggest thing that'll be happening is Courtney's education program. She's got her studio classes that will be happening. They're happening right now. She's in the fall session. And then she'll jump into spring probably around...
In winter, we're planning. Winter or spring, we're kind of working this out. We'll have a plan probably in the next 2 or 3 weeks once we put this to bed. I can really focus in on that. But we want... Since we're doing classes in the fall, we want to offer performance opportunities in the winter and spring. So we've got some ideas for some one acts and things like that. Once we get past this show and I'm really able to plan it out, we'll be announcing the next phase of the education program.
I'd be sort of curious to know, how long do the lines stay with you after the play is over? After October 1st? That Sunday you wake up, do you just flush them out of your mind, or is there like a trace?
I mean, I still remember lines that I had when I was in eighth grade. Honestly, they'll pop into my head sometimes. But it just, I don't know, it depends. I mean, it is a lot of effort. Like, I run my lines almost every day. Mm-hmm. So I really do stay on top of them. So once you stop doing that every day, you know, naturally. But I always like to hold on to at least, like, a chunk, like a monologue or something. Mm-hmm, that way, if you ever have to audition, you have something that you can, you know, do right away, and you've played the character.
Right off the cuff, you're
familiar with the show. So everything else goes away, but I tend to keep like a monologue from each of them. That way, I can use them for auditions.
So by mid October, many of the lines will have fallen away, but yet you'll keep a core.
Yeah. I'm kind of deciding that right now, actually. Oh, cool. I was kind of going through, I'm like, I think this is what I'm going to keep.
And we'll probably make fun of Courtney relentlessly because Cecily is so different.
Yeah.
As soon as she taps into it, we'll know Cecily's back.
That's an interesting point about the character. Like, do we have any method actors in town?
You're looking at one right now. Okay. This one over here. She has a process every day in rehearsal where she'll disappear for about 15, 20 minutes and you see her, and as soon as her hands go up to her sides, and she starts shivering
character.
Those shoulders, she is Cecily, and it's really fun to watch, because we all know in rehearsal, as soon as Courtney walks out, and she's twisting her hair, and she's got this little glow in her eye, Cecily's in the room. It is not Courtney. Cecily has hit the building.
I get really nervous, actually, in front of crowds when I have to public speak or anything. So I've really found the only way that I can get not so nervous is finding my characters in the process that I go through. And it helps me get, like, excited and really in that moment. I'm not the kind of method actor who does, like, you know, things
She's not out. Jim Carrey.
No,
okay.
no.
She's not Jim Carrey.
Within the world that we create, I like to find that character. And it just helps me overall, and it makes each night fresh and new and allows me to tap into that character brain a lot more and put that actor brain a bit to rest.
Wow. Well, the only thing I would think, though, is you're in your character, you're on the stage, and somebody sneezes in the audience, or, you know, that something happens, you know, that you're dealing with the unexpected, you know, most nights smooth, you just go right on through, but there might be something that would occur that breaks you out of character and getting back in.
And sometimes your fellow actors like to break you on stage as well.
Like they like to try.
Especially in comedies.
Wonderful. Anything in closing? We've been here with Keeley Gray and Courtney Roberts, The Importance of Being Earnest, the 23rd, 24th, the 30th, and October 1st at the Panada. Anything in closing you'd like to say?
Just that we're super grateful for our community and all of our support. Want to give a shout out to the 219 again because they allowed us to have their our speakeasy fundraiser, which helped us get funds for our production. So Mark and Mel, the 219, we love you guys. You're amazing. We appreciate you. And just the support that we've gotten from the community, from KRFY, you guys as well. Thank you for including us today.
You're welcome.
The Daily Bee and the Reader, we love you guys, and we just really love this community, and we love performing for this community and giving you great entertainment in a great place.
You certainly do that. Now, I know to Courtney, we can say, break a leg.
Thank you.
But what do we say to the director?
You can say break a leg. You can definitely say break a leg, because I feel like there's a part of me that's on stage with all of my actors and my crew. So... for me, it's that performance anxiety.
Break your
as
leg
well.
Too, Keeley.
I will try and break both.
We're going to take a music break and then come back with calendar of events. On this date, September 15th in 1983, Huey Lewis and the News released Sports, that album. And here is the biggie song off that album. You'll recognize it right away. Huey Lewis and the News on this date in 1983. Sports was released. That was the album on which It's the Heart of Rock and Roll, a big, 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 big hit for Huey Lewis and the News.
Yeah, and Sports was their big breakthrough.
Probably
album,
their big album, right? Absolutely. Yeah. San Francisco band.
Yeah, the only thing I know about that, or I guess I know a little bit about that. I've always liked the songs of Huey Lewis and the News. But they
which one was in Back to the Future?
That was The Power of Love.
The Power of Love. Okay.
The story, or actually, two, they did The Power of Love, and then they did Back in Time as well, kind of as a freebie, because The Power of Love doesn't have the words, you know, Back to the Future in the lyrics. So you have to, if you're trying to promote the movie, you don't get much from it. But they actually did that. That movie ended up doing okay anyway.
But, it did quite well.
But I think if I'm not mistaken, they also get like a lot of the royalties from the theme from Ghostbusters, because it has certain similarities to I Want a New Drug from that same album.
Interesting.
And they were like, and I think they were approached to write the theme to Ghostbusters. They said, no, we don't do movie soundtracks at that time. Mm-hmm. And somebody basically kind of copied the Huey Lewis sound to make Ghostbusters, which is pretty different.
Turned out to be a, but you can
another
hear
huge hit, but you can hear
but
a lot
you can
of
hear a lot of the same sound.
Yeah, and then they, I guess, learned their lesson from that and said, "Yeah, we'll do Back to the Future." And there you go. That's what I know about. That's my trivia about Huey Lewis in the News.
Let's talk about upcoming events tonight at the Panada Theater, the Bonner County Human Rights Task Force. is presenting a movie for free, but the movie's going to be preceded by music, Bridges Borders, highlighting grassroots program to bringing classical music education to young Mexican musicians to Sandpoint every year. So mm-hmm. there's going to be a mini concert, and it's for free. And then the movie itself, if I'm not mistaken, stars Kevin Costner, and Jim White moves his family after losing his last job as a football coach. And at his new school, he turns 7 disappointing students into one of the best cross-country teams in the region. So it sounds...
Oh, this is one of what's it called again?
It's mm-hmm. called McFarland yeah. USA, and that will mm-hmm. be the movie, and there'll be a music across borders, Bridges Borders, little concert beforehand, and it's brought to you by the Bonner County Human Rights Task Force at the Panada Theater and at 6:30, and it's for free, and it sounds like a family event.
Mm-hmm.
You know, inspiring.
Yeah.
So that's tonight, as well as today through the 18th, the Northern Rocky Mountain Biodiversity Challenge. Bonner County will be one of 106 jurisdictions competing in the 2022 Fall Northern Rocky Mountains Biodiversity Challenge, encompassing a region from Yellowstone to the Yukon. Go to inaturalist.org for more information.
Okay, the Biodiversity Challenge.
Yep, it sounds like, my understanding is you go out and you take images of what's growing in your backyard and in your area that is part of the natural habitat, then identify it and go from there.
Interesting.
Yes, absolutely.
What else is coming up? Well, tomorrow... we have Maya Wynn at the Panada Theater, indie folk type music, local high school. She also spends time with local high school students focusing on the power of self-expression through songwriting workshops. This is presented by the Pondere Arts Council. September is also National Suicide Awareness and Prevention Month, and Maya's visit to Sandpoint will underscore other important community events like the annual Walk for Hope. The show tomorrow begins at 7:30 p.m. with doors opening an hour before that. Tickets are available at canada.org and also at POAC, artinsandpoint.org.
And at the door.
And at the door.
Yep. Okay. Tomorrow, Bonner County Historical Society's 50th birthday party. The museum is hosting a birthday celebration at 611 South Ella Avenue with cake. I'll be there. A prize for the best 1970s artifact donated to the museum. Ooh.
1970s.
You know, that's 50 years. 1970s. What? You could always take a penny that was minted in that year. Mm-hmm.
You'll probably bring your bell bottoms.
those bell bottoms have long gone.
Okay.
Bring a memento, photo, or story for the time capsule. Cool. Annual meeting presentation at 3:30 p.m. will be followed by the party 4 to 6. Free and open to the public, and the museum is a great place to spend some time.
Here's the I-48 Film Festival, now in its 19th year. This is worth mentioning, especially if you're not familiar with it. I-48 is an annual challenge to filmmaker teams from around Idaho to conceive, create, and finish a short film about 3 to 6 minutes long. You have 2 days to do it.
That's 48 hours.
Yep. On Friday, that's tomorrow at 6 p.m. If you're a team. Oh,
it's Saturday, Sunday.
Oh, is it?
It's a okay. Saturday, Sunday. Tomorrow
oh, you're right.
night is
yeah,
Maya Wynn, POAC.
Yeah.
It's a busy time at the Panada.
Okay. So you get a packet that reveals to you the genre of movie that you must make, plus a character, a line of dialogue, and a prop that must be included in the film. So you can't cheat by starting to make your movie in advance.
Yeah.
Well, I imagine you don't get to know what your movie's about until then.
Maybe the prop is a newspaper that has the date of something like that.
And then you get 2 days to do it, and by 6 p.m. on Sunday, that you have to write, produce, cast, costume, location, shoot, edit, and score a completed film.
Cool.
Then you they're judged for awards and screened for the public at the Flix Theaters and Historic Egyptian Theater in downtown Boise. And you can see the Best of I-48 2022, showcasing the 14 films that won awards for in previous categories at the Panetta Theater. Shows on Saturday, September 17th at 7 p.m. and Sunday, September 18th at 2:30 p.m. So that's if you want to watch what has happened in the past. And if you're interested in making a movie, check out I-48.
Absolutely. So again, that is Saturday and Sunday. Saturday evening, Sunday afternoon. 14 of the films will be showcased, and that's at the Panetta Theater.
Have you seen any of them?
No, I haven't. I'm working both events, so okay. I'm going to be, once I shut down the bar, I'm going to slip in, because I'm always surprised about the talent and the creativity. What this is sort of like, this is the equivalent of the Food Channel's Chopped. You've opened your basket, and what you have to create out of that, the ingredients, you know, you've got 48 hours, and you've got to have this prop and go with it.
Yeah. It's a cool idea. I just realized that we're completely out of time.
No way, Jose.
And it's bird note time.
Okay. Thank you, Jack.
I guess that's it.
I won't be here next week.
Oh, yeah. I will be here next week, and I don't know if I have a co-host or not, but somebody will be here with me, probably. Stay tuned for Bird Note and then Autosyclectic Mix all day long after that, right here on 88.5 KRFY.